Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to ManCast. I'm Zach Bertie. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
Tired old Zach Bertie.
Yeah, it's been a... Yeah.
We do this every show. We start it by complaining about how tired we are and how overworked we are. And I'm sure that people are like, all right, just get on with it.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, you should read the 2017 Fall Manga Guide, which is on Anime News Network right now, that I put a lot of work into. And it's... Also, yeah, there's a siren.
We'll just start over.
What a fantastic show. No, I'm just going to leave this in.
What?
I'm just going to leave it in. It's Thanksgiving week. Everyone's checked out. They're like, fuck it, I'm going to grandma's.
They're full of turkey. They now think the siren is outside their house.
I'm going to eat some pumpkin pie, and I'm so looking forward to having many days off in a row. It's going to be real good. Anyway, yo, there's a manga guide on ANN right now. We covered like 30 books. And then another, like, half a dozen light novels or something. It's on the site right now. Check it out. Also, right now is our gift guide, which is going to be all week this week. DVD went up. Today's Monday. I think that's the day this is going up. So check that out, too. It really helps us when you click on stuff like the gift guide and things like that. Moving a kitten out of the way. That's why my voice is exerting. We've kind of been hard at work on those things, plus a lot of other interviews and stuff, but lots of content on the site. Mm-hmm. And then last week we tried to tape this show, and there was an audio problem, and so I've rearranged everything since moving into this new office. Mm-hmm. And all my wires are like kind of in different places now, and the kitten has been like climbing all over shit. By the time we taped the show last week, there was like a buzz in the anyway. Couldn't really do anything about it, so we were like, fuck it.
No worries.
We'll tape the show on Monday and post it on Monday. It's going to be fine. Hey, you know what? We also have time to do now before we tape the show next week.
Mm-hmm.
See the Zack Snyder, Joss Whedon film, Justice League.
A film by both men, and yet neither of them.
And yet neither.
Mm-hmm. A film for no one, you might say.
A
film for investors to get maybe their money back a little bit.
I feel like that movie feels
not
like...
Really.
It is a product of both of them, just a very watered down, weirdly edited product of both of them. Like, if you said, like, oh, the two people behind this movie were Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon, I would say, like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't read like a collaboration between two people. It reads
it's not.
Because it wasn't. It reads like a movie made by one person, another movie made by another person that some poor editor or 10 had to turn into a watchable film.
Yeah, it's
and that is like, what it is.
The movie came out largely because the wheels were in motion and it had to.
Mm-hmm.
It had to come out.
It had to.
It had to hit those retailer and exhibitor deadlines.
Exactly.
They had to hit that shit.
That's why I said this movie is for nobody but the investors in question and the people holding up the red tape. It's like, well,
yeah,
put it out.
You know, and like that's what, and that's pretty much what the review said. And like, so like, I am a person who has seen the film Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice too many times. I've seen it four times.
I did see three times.
I watch a lot of shit. I watch a lot of bad movies for fun. Uh-huh. I like to watch things and make jokes through them with my friends. That's mm-hmm. what I like. It's a big hobby of mine, I would say. I like to do that. Batman vs. Superman is such a phenomenal turd. It is such a debacle mm-hmm. that when it came out, I wound up seeing it separately with many different groups of friends,
people who
and
do
stuff,
that sort of thing,
who
yes.
want who and who's you know and specifically wanted to endure it with me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I want to watch. Hey, Zach, I want to watch Batman versus Superman with you, and
right.
I'm not going to turn that down. You know, even though I've already seen it, it's like, oh well. First, I'm touched.
Right.
Second.
And
sure.
I was involved in, I believe, two out of these three repeat occasions.
Yeah,
so
at least
I've
two
seen
of
it
them.
Thrice. Right.
Two out of four.
No, I'm saying three out of four.
Yeah, 3 out of 4. Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, but, it was just. So I've seen that movie a lot, and like in my opinion, both versions of it, both the shorter and the extended, are the worst modern superhero movie I've ever seen. It's a dour, hateful, fucking slog, confusingly badly written, terrible, just bad,
hilariously weird plot points that don't make any sense. Weird framing,
like to the point where the meme from that movie
Granny's
is the fucking
peach tea.
It's like Granny's peach tea, which is a jar full of piss that Lex Luthor gives to his senator, and
before
then,
he blows up Congress,
and then Martha. Which, you know,
Martha.
Both of their moms are named Martha.
Somebody saw that and was like, guys.
When we were sitting
guys,
in Justice
this
League.
This is what's going to make them stop fighting.
When we're,
the conversation's been had.
When we're sitting, yeah, that conversation's been had. But, like, when we were sitting in Justice League and at the end of the movie, they're all fighting fucking the Boston Philharmonic or, like, Jefferson Starship? Steppenwolf is the name of
his
the bad
name
guy.
Is Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf.
Yes.
I knew it was a 70s band. I was just saying. I wanted to shout, like, maybe his mom's name is Martha. Like,
have you tried his mom's
name? Like, it was just on the pregnant. Yeah, anyway.
He combines the cube. Well, they're called the mother boxes, right? So he's going to combine those three cubes and he's going to be like,
Martha,
a new planet for you. And they're like, wait a minute.
What?
Wait, Steppenwolf, let's talk this out.
Yeah, Superman's like, that's my mom's name. Batman's like, it's also my mom's name. And Steppenwolf is like, what? But that's my mom's name. Like, that would have been a great ending. Yeah. How happy would you have been if that had happened?
I would smile
the theater
so
would
hard
have fucking
my cheeks
lost
would have just
it.
Flown off.
Like, people would have they should shoot that.
Yeah.
That would be
the
much
mother boxes'
better.
Names are Martha.
Much better. Anyway, so it was a bad movie. It was just like, here's all the footage that we had that is mostly finished. And it didn't, like, the footage itself didn't seem particularly finished. The
CG
in particular.
No, the color grading was 100% just not
it wasn't
finished
done.
On many scenes.
Yeah, so, like, 50, it felt, okay, this is probably generous, but it felt like 60% of that movie was reshoots. That's what it felt like.
I think
fully half. Fully half, maybe more than half. Mm-hmm. Was reshoots, and the reshoots were done by Joss Whedon, and they were all done on sound stages instead of locations.
I would say more than half if you count some of the reshoots were spliced into, like, so some of the action scenes that were done on location, like the big fight against the big fight against Superman, spoilers, was shot on location, but some of it is interspersed with, like, okay, this is a soundstage, like close up, that kind of thing, and it's like, oh.
Well, it's a soundstage close-up that hasn't been color-graded to match the rest of the film, and they're all the same as Suicide Squad's reshoots, which Suicide Squad, if you saw that movie, has a bunch of scenes that look like they were shot on a different set using a different camera with different lighting, and what the person is doing is yelling a joke. Mm-hmm. That is fully two-thirds of Justice League, is people standing on a different set with a different camera and a different director yelling jokes.
Or Fantastic Four, where people just, like, the wardrobe literally had
Fantastic
changed.
Four, if you want to laugh your ass off.
Yeah, at the reshoots.
Get some beers and watch the Josh Trank Fantastic Four with your friends. And watch for when suddenly they're in front of a green screen and you can see the chroma key hanging out and, like, what's her face is Kate Mara's terrible wig.
Yeah, Kate Mara's,
like,
awful wig.
She changed her hair. They shot that movie. The executive said, oh my God, what the fuck? Asked for, like, the entire thing to be reshot. Kate Mara had already changed her hair, so she is wearing a, like, unbrushed cosplay wig for, like, half the movie. It's so good. Uh-huh. It's so funny.
And on that note, so Henry Cavill, for another film, grew out a mustache. So when they had to bring him in for Superman for reshoots, as you've probably seen many things online, his mouth is so rubbery and Uncanny Valley-y that the film opens with a cell phone video, an upright, like, they were trying to mask it because it's one of the few times that Superman is in really full, flat lighting, talking just directly to the camera. So they're trying to mask it by, okay, it's a vertical cell phone video and it's kind of a little blurry, but it's still, even from that distance and at that aspect, you can see that his mouth is CG. It still looks weird. And that's the first shot of the movie.
CG'd.
Like, this boom, shotgun, first shot of the movie is Henry Cavill's CG mouth in a cell phone video trying and failing to mask it. It's like, well, it can only go up from here.
Yeah, it was kind of as a film, like, to me, it's impossible to talk about the movie just as a film, because that's not really what it exists as.
It doesn't feel like a real movie.
No, it's a weird footnote. Mm-hmm. It's a weird, like, oh, that strange, like, aborted Justice League movie that's, like, by two different people, mm-hmm. and, like, tragedy struck the production, right. and, like... Yeah, like, what a weird... And it grossed $94 million over the weekend, which would be a huge success for pretty much anything except a giant superhero tentpole. Mm-hmm. And that movie has to crack something like 750 worldwide.
And we don't know.
Just to break a tiny profit. But they're saying 350 or so.
Well, we don't know what the second weekend is going to be what the second weekend drop off is going to be like yet. And it was Batman versus Superman set a monetary record for the biggest weekend, not percentage, but monetary for the biggest difference in money between the first and second weekend. And Suicide Squad, I think, came in like third on that same count. So, like, what is the weekend drop off? Thanksgiving weekend with this Pixar movie coming out,
with a Pixar movie, yeah.
It's like, what is this weekend drop off going to be?
70%.
God. And when the opening weekend was already bad, because for Batman versus Superman Suicide Squad, the opening weekend was not bad. The problem was the drop off.
So here's the thing.
And critical reception. This was a bad opening weekend. So how much worse is it going to be?
So
if there's fall off,
I did not hate Justice League.
Well, no. How could you? Like, how can I summon any emotion for what I sat through other than mild pity?
You know,
mild pity was my reaction.
At points, I thought it was the movie's never boring.
Mostly, yes, never.
It's
really
never boring.
It moves too quickly.
It's paced pretty well. It's over in 2 hours, which is nice. There are some funny jokes. I did like some of the rapport between some of the cast members. Fucking Khal Drogo, Jason Momoa, is just being Jason Momoa wearing an Aquaman costume, and apparently that was all reshoots, and you can tell because the costume doesn't look very good, and it's shot all on different sets. Like, a lot of scenes are like a character by themselves sitting on like a barrel in a set, and like it cuts over to them and they say something like, "Huh, bet you didn't see that coming," or something like that, and then it cuts back to whatever the scene was.
I wanted to have transitions from like the old Justice League cartoon.
Yeah, there's a scene near the end of the movie where Superman says something to the effect of like, "Well, I knew you didn't like me," and Batman gets this like comical look on his face, and he's like, "Well, I don't not like you," and you're like, "Who is this Batman character?" Mm-hmm. Because the one in the last movie was like,
"Well, who is this
murdering
Superman?
People just and torturing idea. Them?" And in this one, he's like, "We got to bring Superman back to life. He's a good guy." Like,
just the idea of Superman smiling and cracking a joke, laughing at all, is alien and bizarre. And it's like, maybe they didn't bring him back. Maybe this is someone else.
But Batman's character is completely different.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It is a totally different character in this movie. Which is fine, but it's...
Superman's completely different, too. It's just harder to appreciate because he had no character to begin with, and now he is.
And it's also...
kind of nice, I guess.
And a lot of the reshoots were obviously like, oh my god, everyone gives a shit about Wonder Woman. So they have two introductions for Wonder Woman. One is at the beginning, obvious reshoots, where she stops a... And it's not a bank heist. It's framed
terrorism's
as... But it
bank.
Is framed and executed and shot in a bank as a bank heist.
Yes.
So, whatever.
Like, they're missing is big cartoony bags of money.
Yeah.
They swap that out for a bomb because I guess they're terrorists, but who cares?
And but it isn't a big cartoon bomb either, which it should be.
It's a briefcase with like...
One of
white.
These movies should at some point have Batman holding a giant cartoon bomb and running.
Yes.
They're assholes if they don't do that. And I don't mean a fucking Lego. I mean, like... Christopher Nolan Batman runs with a giant bomb.
Some days you just can't get rid of it.
I wonder if they ever like shot that like on set, like got Christian Bale, like he probably takes himself too seriously, but
no,
they'd be like, "All right, we were gonna give," and he just knows what to do. He's like, "Give me, yeah,
give it to me.
Holds it up above his head and runs down the sidewalk.
come back, we didn't light it yet. Yeah. There's a big cartoon fuse at the top. Right. I forgot where I was going with that, but like, it's the tone is very cartoony, but not all the time and not successfully. It's just like fake levity in fake levity on a production that looks cheap. You know it's not, but looks cheap because the color grading isn't done. The effects are definitely unfinished. Like,
oh yeah,
really
boy.
Unfinished. And
totally unfinished.
And the performances are like, I guess we like each other. None of this has been established, but joke. And so, all of it feels like a Saturday morning cartoon.
It feels like the CW Joss Whedon quips. Feels like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the Joss Whedon sort of aesthetic, which you can see.
It does. That cheap TV aesthetic. It has that a lot.
Yeah.
I can tell which ones were shot by him.
Yes, but it doesn't feel cohesive if he did it. And I'm not a fan of Joss Whedon. I am almost an anti-fan of Joss Whedon.
Well, it's not like it's his DP and his, you know.
Exactly. If I'm almost an anti-fan of Joss Whedon, but I know how that stuff is like shot and paced and stuff like that. And it is not like that. It's like a weird flat cartoon made by somebody who doesn't. It felt like somebody brought up, it's not as bad as like a Schumacher movie, but it feels like it could have been made if it looked cheaper even. If all of the dialogue was otherwise the same and the editing was kind of otherwise the same, if it looked cheaper and had worse actors or whatever, it could have been a 90s superhero movie. Absolutely. It could have been in the mold of a Schumacher, only not quite as garish, because few things are as garish.
It wouldn't have all those characters either, but...
Yeah. But it's... Yeah. It's like, oh, this is just an incomplete movie is what I'm watching.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I didn't hate it as much as I hated... I didn't hate it at all, really. I genuinely hated Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman.
Same.
And this was, like, them trying to hurriedly... Like, I'm sorry, I'm trying to erase it. You know?
Like, I'm sorry, I'm trying to delete it.
Yeah. Like, that's what the movie feels like.
I will
like.
Face the Snyderverse and walk backwards into hell.
Yeah, because it starts literally the minute after Batman vs. Superman ends, this movie starts. So it does kind of play as the 2-hour epilogue of Batman vs. Superman, where they're like, whoops, we made a lot of bad, whoa, here's some jokes. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, all you can do is like, bless your heart. Like, the reaction of the movie is just bless your heart. That's all you can kind of give it. It's hard to summon any hatred, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
unless you liked those Snyder movies, in which case.
You should get fucked up and watch it with your friends anyway. Maybe you've already done that, maybe you're gonna do that, but that is the way to approach
that movie.
That particular film. So I haven't really had a tremendous amount of time to watch anime because I've been doing all this other shit. I got to catch up on Junie Tyson, which apparently sucks.
Yeah. So, homie, don't know
maybe
how
I
to
shouldn't
write
watch
a,
it.
I mean, yeah. So Nisa was in.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I think I'm getting sick.
Yeah. Nisa Oisin doesn't know how to write a battle royale story. He basically he's not a bad writer. He's written some good things, but the problem is Nisa Oisin's approach is usually like, what philosophical or just comedic punchline can I put on a thing? And then he'll write 50,000 words leading up to that. And maybe it's a clever idea, but it wasn't worth 50,000 words. And so his approach to a battle royale story is the same thing of what if you knew who was going to die and in what order, because I'm basing it off of the Zodiac. Like, what if you knew that? And he just decided that was the conceit. And then he just wrote around that and just put in puns and his favorite, like, little literary tricks and little bits and bobs. But it's like, but that's not, okay, so, but you haven't written a battle royale story before Nisa Oisin. That kills it. Like, people who like battle royale stories like them because they don't know who's going to go next, and they try to guess, like, who's going to be able to survive and who can trust who. Like, that's part of the appeal. Mm-hmm. So if the premise is you know the order right away, it kills a lot of the suspense. So you have to compensate for that with, okay, but you love the characters. But he didn't seem interested in that. He doesn't develop any of the characters. They're all just, like, crazy mass murderers with not really any depth, but, like, a lot of weird gimmicks and cool wardrobes and stuff like that. That's it. So it just doesn't... It's fundamentally like, okay, you didn't get the appeal of this genre, but you just did this as a writing exercise. And then somebody turned it into a show for some reason. So, yeah, it's bad.
For some reason.
For some reason. Because they ran out of monogatari as well. Like, oh, we're running low on monogats. Does anybody want, you know?
Well, I'm sure, you know, everything that guy writes will get turned into an anime.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I won't catch up then if it sucks. I'm not going to waste my time.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything really discussable in it. It was just the unfortunate thing. Like, if it was bad, but it was interesting or fun to discuss bad, that'd be one thing, but...
Yeah. Or entertaining.
Yeah, it's... At times it's entertaining, but it is in bits, because that's the thing. He does take an entire episode. He takes entire episodes out to show you somebody's backstory, but it's not a sympathetic backstory.
Mm.
It's just, this person sure was an asshole. Like, that's it. And I don't understand why that's in there. I found out, so we recently posted a review of Lindsay Loveridge reviewed the novel, and apparently the reason for that is that the book doesn't have any of those backstories. Those backstories are just like profiles at the beginning that you can or cannot read if you don't want to. The whole story is just action sequences. That's it. Then the show obviously can't do that. So they put everybody's backstories into their episodes with action sequences. But that just makes it feel long and drawn out because the backstories aren't interesting. So it's just like, why waste time trying to humanize these characters? They're not sympathetic.
You know, it's not a terrible premise.
No, it's a really good premise, but it wasn't... You know, he just didn't do anything interesting with it. It's just like, why? This is cool. Why didn't you make it suspenseful? I mean, if you like Battle Royale stories, there are a bunch of other good ones out there. This is not a good one.
I'm surprised there isn't, like, an anthropomorphized zodiac signs thing, like, based on the Western zodiac.
I mean,
I'm surprised that doesn't exist.
There are stories that base characters off of that, but I don't know of like a
prominent... but like just make it real literal for real today's nice literal audiences. Like
now
I'm in love with Pisces, but Cancer is blah blah. And, yeah, you know.
Oh yeah, like a harem filled with
reverse harem with all the
or just regular harem. Yep. However you want to do it.
Regular.
Hey, harem. The twins, you know.
Yeah, sure. Hey, there you go.
It's a Siamese twin girl.
Why doesn't that exist? Anyway. Yo, you know what I'm excited to watch?
What?
Gundam Wing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll revisit that. See, I've only seen probably like 5 episodes total of it, so it's going to be a new experience
for me. Oh, boy. Gundam Wing gets real silly. So the next series discussion on Ancast is finally Gundam Wing. We got the Blu-rays in from Right Stuff. Mm-hmm. They look good. Looking forward to watching it. That'll be our next series. That'll be December's series discussion. We are also planning on doing an Anime of the Year podcast in December. Uh-huh. That should be interesting. We'll be posting more about that in the coming weeks. Uh-huh. Probably looking for participation on that. Hey, why don't we do Twitter questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because
we got some of them.
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay, from Grant the Thief. Do Boston and Philly watch anime with you, or do they run off to do cat things? Actually, they do.
They like the moving things on the screen.
Our cats like moving things on screens.
Uh-huh.
When I have a video game on the TV that is running at 60 frames per second or close to it or something that looks close to 60 FPS, the kitten gets really excited.
Yeah.
She really likes to watch me play Breath of the Wild on that TV because I play that game with like the smooth motion on, which to me gives it a kind of a nice smoothness. I like the way the game looks. It looks like it's running at 60 FPS. It's not, but it looks like it.
Yeah, I don't like it. It's distracting for me.
I like the way it looks. Only on video games, certain video games. She likes that. And it anime too, like if it's moving at a certain clip or if there's something that is small that's moving around the screen.
Yeah, it just has to catch their attention.
Yeah, totally. But yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Wayne wants to know, any shows in your backlog that you got to recently and it ended up being better than you expected? Did you go back and watch anything? You had this experience recently with School Live, right?
Yeah, that was earlier this year. I don't remember. I think it was springish. Maybe it was early summer. It was some time when there was like time for me to watch things that weren't in the current season, which is not the case right now at all. This season is full slate, so no backlog right now. But I watched School Live and enjoyed it. I could go into a discussion of that, but that's like kind of a whole thing.
Well, that's not the point. We're not here to.
I know. So I'm like. But if there was anything else, I don't know. Was there anything for you, or was it mostly just stuff you watched?
The biggest one in recent memory is From the New World, where I had never seen it, and then watched it, and was like, this is one of the best anime I've ever seen.
Right.
And I still think about it a lot, and it quickly, just immediately put itself among my favorite anime series of all time, like immediately. And Fate Zero was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't watch a lot of stuff as it airs, most of the shit is like this for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a show I was... had been meaning to get to and just never did, that's a little different. Like something I'm like, I'm really motivated to watch this, so I will. Generally, I'll just watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something like I keep meaning to have time for that and I never get to it, that's a little more rare where one of those is seriously catapults itself to you know, the top of my rankings. But
right.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often. I'm having a hard time trying to think of, there are shows where, like, I thought I liked it and I went back and watched it again and I realized I loved it. Uh-huh. Like Wolf's Rain. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, I like that show. Uh-huh. And then I went back and watched it again and was like, this is one of the best
I had an experience.
Ever seen.
Yeah. I had an experience like that recently because
excuse me, sorry.
Because with the Kino's Journey remake being so bad.
Yeah.
Like,
and yet blockbuster
shit.
Traffic.
Well, I mean, well, a lot of people had nostalgia for that, I guess, and came back to it. But, like, yeah, well, as I say, blockbuster traffic and middling ratings. Like, it doesn't have awful ratings, but it should be sitting up. People thought it would be sitting up there with Magus Bride, and it's
oh, I wouldn't have guessed
ratings
that.
Wise.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, people love that old show. Like, and people were.
You mean
just,
ratings? Not
like 5 out of 5.
Television ratings. You mean like 5 out of 5.
Yes, okay. I mean user ratings on our site.
I was about
site.
To say, like, Magus Bride must be selling better than...
No. I think they're probably pretty similar. I don't know.
Well, there's a voice actress thing with Kino's Journey. You got to put these things in context.
Yeah, exactly. It's well, so user ratings on our site, people thought Kino's Journey would be up there at the top. It is not. It's in the lower third-ish, which is
down
not...
Down there with Love Live.
It's down there with Love Live and some other stuff. It's not like in the crap area, but it's in
crap
the
area.
It's not with like 2 stars. It's in like
the crap
here's
area.
Here's the thing on our site to get below 4 stars.
I need to get the chart and just put like a little like this is the crap area.
Well, yeah, it's not in the so Kino's Journey the remake is not in the crap area, but it is in the realm of like 3.5 stars on average, right? And to get like 3.5 stars on average, like beneath like 3.9 at the highest or whatever, like you kind of have to be pretty divisive, because usually the people who are watching a show, like, it's going to keep it up there in the you know, if a show's doing well, its average is usually gonna be 4.4 or 4.2.
yeah,
you know,
Kino's Journey is sitting in the middle, like 14, 18, etc. Love Live is like 5 spaces below that, I would say.
Yeah, it's in it. Basically, it's not in the top half. It's just under the top half. My point is, people thought it would be much higher, and so it's divisive, but it's getting a lot of traffic, which is good.
Boy, do you know what people don't like?
What?
King's Game, the animation.
Yeah, well, yeah, that
and
was,
DSRA.
Everybody knew that those were going to be a big piece of crap. But anyway, speaking of Kino's Journey, though, I had an experience recently, which watching this remake. And looking back at the stories from the books, and so here's the skinny. The stories from the books are like, eh, they're not that good, as it turns out. As it turns out, they're not that good, because comparing even, like, the...
According to you.
According to me. But that's not the only person I can speak for, right? So, these are...
Just clarifying it.
Yeah,
you stated as a fact.
But these stories, like, comparing them, so they're not that good. And comparing the stories from the book to their adaptations from that first anime, it's like, oh, the Nakamura really did something with this material. It isn't as complex or interesting or tonally grounded as the adaptation was. It just isn't. But the remake does a disservice to that. It's not like the remake is at the level of these kind of meh stories. The remake is way worse, because the most recent episode of that remake, they decided to have like a flashback to a character, the Kino's old teacher. Her master is like one of the only human characters in her life. They decided to have a flashback to her life. The story, the show has never introduced her. She was like introduced gradually in the first series. They never introduced her in this remake. She's just like, oh, let me tell you about my master. And it suddenly flashes back to her past. We never even met her as an old lady. So why are we going to care about her past? I don't know. But then they show the whole flashback in like a gradient you would get in Windows Movie Maker sepia. Like, not just artistic sepia, but it looks like an overlay with fake film effects that you would put on Windows Movie Maker, like that fake of sepia, for like a 16 minute flashback. The whole time is a fake sepia over their animation. It looks bad. It looks washed out.
It's like someone took like a light brown and just turned the opacity down.
Yeah, and it's like, what the hell? Like, why is this artistic choice? So it's just really like a bunch of bad artistic choices on top of stories that just kind of aren't that good compared to so. Anyway, I say all this because, of course, like, I took some time out to watch some of my favorite episodes. For, and even some of my not favorite episodes, I would say my least favorite episode of the original series is the Land of Books. I think that one kind of doesn't really have much of a point. But, like, the rest of the episodes, you know, strong to incredible. And it's like, man, this was so good. Like, this is just a really, really good adaptation of, all right material. And so it's really fascinating to see, like, this old show, which is just really, really strong compared to this remake, which is, I would say, actively bad and repellent, and it makes Kino look like an asshole, and you don't understand why you're supposed to like or care about anything in it, compared to like this show that's like extremely thoughtful and people still remember, and we're excited for this new show 14 years later because of how good it was. And it's like, oh, like adaptation, my point is adaptation makes a huge difference, which is, and it's interesting to watch like this gulf of difference between these two versions.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting.
Overdouble wants to know, which three people, dead or alive, in or out of the anime industry, would you like to share a pizza with? Share a pizza. Who do I know that loves pizza?
Are the Ninja Turtles anime?
God, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but if you're a fan.
In several instances, the Ninja Turtles are anime. I don't like questions like this. It's not a knock on you, Overdouble. It's a perfectly sensible, reasonable question to ask. It's just like, you know, if you ask me, like, who would you love to interview? You know, like, I try to make the most of the opportunities that come my way, and, like, I don't like doing the thing where it's like, I would really love to sit down with Anno Hideo. Like, I would have to prepare for that for a really long time.
Yeah.
And my thing would be, I'm serious about this. My thing would be, like, I hope that I would be able to do a good interview with somebody like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of hubris and ego to be like, I would just love to sit down with Hayao Miyazaki. Man, yeah. I better fucking know. Like, I better be a qualified fucking person to sit down across from the table from that guy and ask him good, thoughtful questions that he thinks are worth his time. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, like, they can't be, like, dickheads who think that every question that comes our way is bad or, like, you know, whatever. Like, they might be the type of creative who thinks that every journalist is wasting their time. I've certainly run into those people before, but, like, to me, it's kind of ego to be like, I would just I would probably bore the fuck out of Yoshiyuki Tomino. I would bore the shit out of Anno Hideaki. Like, I would love to interview those guys. I would love a long time to prepare for it, and I would take it really fucking seriously.
Yeah,
and that's the level of respect that I think those people deserve.
Yeah,
it's not just casually throwing out, I want to have pizza with Eiichiro Oda.
Yeah.
And do what? Waste his fucking time telling him how much you like One Piece?
Yeah, I mean,
not that that's a bad... It's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, do
no,
you get
I,
what I'm
I
saying?
Understand. I think that the question was probably asked more in jest than perhaps the thought we were assigning to it, but I understand what you mean. And, I think when it comes to interviewing people specifically, like, for instance, I had to write the questions for our interview with Sayo Yamamoto and her crew recently for Yuri on Ice, and that's certainly not at the level of a Hayao Miyazaki or a Hideaki Anno, but I was like, I thought really hard about it because I was like, what can I ask these people that they have not been asked 20 million times by people like Yuri on Ice? Because it's this huge hit, and I was like, I was trying to be thoughtful, but like, it wasn't the most fun interview to write. Like, I've had more fun writing questions for like lesser creators in terms of popularity and reach, because like I might like their work just as much, I might be just as invested in their work as I am in Yuri on Ice, but I don't have to feel intimidated by like asking them questions that they've been asked before, or their managers getting really, really touchy because of their popularity and their reach. You know, it's more intimate, right? So, like
you would want to be the first person to interview Saya Yamamoto after Yuri on Ice hits.
And if you can't be that person, you better be like the most incisive person.
You should try to be very, and you should try not to waste their time. Like, Stefan wants to know, do you think Rotten Tomatoes does a bad film any favors by deliberately delaying its score? No.
It obviously didn't help the box office of Justice League, and it doesn't look good either. They have to release them by Wednesday or Thursday or whenever they did, by which point, you know, maybe a lot of people have bought their tickets, but surely not the majority. Like, it doesn't make a big difference. It just makes you look like an asshole, I think.
Yeah, it's a situation where Warner Brothers owns Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And or they're a majority shareholder in it or something, and they purposefully delayed the Rotten Tomatoes score on Justice League, and they claimed that it was to promote some Rotten Tomatoes show where they were going to reveal the score of some big movie or something. Like they're trying to make even more money off of Rotten Tomatoes scores. And this is rooted in there were like a ton of think pieces going around in the last 6 months after all these movies one after the other kind of bombed. over the summer, he had a bunch of franchise failure. They were trying to blame it on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, movie critics, trying to blame it on movie critics. That largely landed flat because it doesn't matter. Like, if the movie is bad, that's not the critic's fault. And these movies were also getting low scores from the audience. People didn't like them. Mm-hmm. So the logic was, you know, self-serving bullshit logic that it's the critic's fault that these movies aren't performing was kind of debunked. But this whole thing with Justice League's Rotten Tomatoes score is very much rooted in that idea that, oh, well, if people don't see the Rotten Tomatoes score, maybe they'll go see it. Maybe we'll have a chance to make Thursday a little stronger or Friday a little bit stronger if no one sees that score before Saturday. Uh-huh. Or Friday or whatever. And it didn't work. Justice League still, while, you know, really underperformed and people still didn't like it, and it didn't have any impact on it because that's not the problem. Because the problem is not that critics say that your bad movie is bad. That's not what your problem is.
Uh-huh.
Moving on, Hazakari asks, how was your birthday, Zach? It was good. We went to Disneyland. How unexpected.
We did. A shock. Surprise.
But it was a really nice Disneyland trip, so.
Yeah.
It was good. So you can have a good or a bad day at Disneyland. Uh-huh. It's you know, it's easy to have a bad day there now because it's so crowded a lot, but if you go at the right time, it's good. CC Takato wants to know, why is the Bone Daddy such a popular object of lust? I believe he's referring to the main character of Ancient Magus Pride.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are reasons for this. The nickname taking off is something that I saw a couple people doing. Not a whole lot. Like, there were a lot of different pet names, and I was like, okay, this character is going to be a big crush for a lot of girls, I can tell already, so I should just hop on this train and push it as hard as I can, because I wanted to push for that to be the prevailing nickname for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I succeeded. I succeeded within my Twitter bubble. I don't know that I actually succeeded anywhere else, but I was like, I'm gonna make this, I just want to make this a thing that people say constantly until they want to die. So that was my effort to, like, push a meme, but I don't know that anybody in the larger fandom actually refers to him as that. I hope they do. I don't know, the reason that he's considered attractive is for, I mean, you could read any essay on the whole Beauty and the Beast complex and what girls find attractive in that, and, you know, you could follow that trail, you know, for a long way and come up with a lot of different answers, but he, Elias fits perfectly in the mold of that archetype without verging into an abusive portrayal, in that he is a provider and a healer who has a large, like, imperfection that needs to be corrected by the girl in question. So it's basically makes her feel strong and protected at the same time, and blah, blah, blah. And he is just kind of a charming personality, and he has a dog skull for a head, and who doesn't like dogs, and, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know, there's all sorts of factors in play here, but he's also attached to a really good, compelling story, so, and that helps as well. That's not a requirement for a fantasy to be, like, to reach an audience, but helps, you know. So, you know, I think that's why a lot of people have their Bone Daddy out for Elliot.
That's funny. All right. Well, I guess that's as thorough an explanation as you're going to find.
In out of nowhere and without having thought about it. Yes, that's the explanation I can give.
The Swami wants to know if we're ever going to do the ReZero podcast again. Yeah, you responded to this with, after season 2 is out, probably. Yeah, probably. Once season 2 is out, we'll cover it again.
Yeah, that seems like the optimal time to come back. We know they're going to make more, so, you know, might as well wait till they make more.
I interviewed the show's director, who was wearing a t-shirt with Subaru on it, holding a little plastic takeout bag, and his t-shirt said start or continue, and continue was highlighted.
Right.
I wonder if they're making more ReZero.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You're reading the tea leaves on that one.
Nos Anime wants to know, what's your stance on the issue of compensation for panelists at anime conventions? Should there be comped badges and other perks, or should people still have to pay to get in? Curious as this came up heavily on Twitter. Okay, so our pal Amelia over at Anime Feminist went to a con in the UK and came back with some commentary on the convention's stance towards paying or compensating panelists for their time. And I guess her attitude was, of course you should. which is should be pretty much everyone's attitude. And the attitude of the convention was this, like, over-the-top kind of old-school beardo, like, oh, you should only do it for the love of it. And, like, no, mm-hmm. we can't afford that. And all this other shit. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's bullshit. If you're running a convention and you can't let your panelists in for free,
right?
Again, it's like budget, food, $500, car, $300, candles, $32,000. Yeah. Please help me budget this. My family is dying. Like,
how many drill references have we
I'm
had
sorry,
in this
I just
podcast?
They keep
no, I don't have
my
a problem. I don't have a problem with this. I just think we're
everything applies.
Yeah,
it always applies. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it's not like you're paying for their hotel or the amount of merchandise that they're going to buy at the convention, all the other stuff. Like, if you're just comping a badge for the person holding a panel, like, I think that's acceptable, and yeah, I don't see why that should be too much.
Yeah, you should definitely compensate them with a badge, you know, let them into the green room. If you need two green rooms, one for your guests, one for your panelists, okay, try to stock them both. But, like, budget for it. Just put it into your budget. You budget for press. You should be able to budget for panelists. Those are people that are literally providing the content that your convention has. You should definitely be compensating them in some fashion. It's weird to me when people get, like, flown out and put up. But
yeah,
if they're
now that's what I'm like. Well, I don't think anybody expects that, right?
If you have a panelist mm-hmm. who is showing up to your convention and is filling up three panel rooms a day for 3 days in a row, mm-hmm. they are contributing potentially more to your convention than mm-hmm. a voice actor guest, mm-hmm. than a musical guest. They're mm-hmm. filling more hours, and they're putting more butts in more seats mm-hmm. than a lot of those people. I'm not saying they're more valuable. I'm saying that their contribution should not be devalued.
Absolutely.
Or treated as though... So, I totally see it. So, like, if you're bringing in a panelist who's doing...
That's not even...
4 hours a day, 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday... I mean, if you're flying him in and putting him up, you should be. Like, he's
well,
a performer
yeah, okay,
at
okay,
that
okay,
point.
Okay, okay. But where do you draw the line? Where is a panelist that is pulling that level of attention? Why aren't they just a guest? You know what I mean? If you're a panelist who has like a panel on 2 days, and they expect you to fly them out there and put them up, like
it's not an expectation thing. I'm saying I'm putting this on the convention.
Odd.
It's not on the panel. I'm talking about this from the perspective of what the convention should do,
uh-huh.
not what the panelist deserves or doesn't deserve. I'm saying what the convention should do. And mm-hmm. in that instance, if you have them doing that much, you're absolutely right. They should be like a guest panelist.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that should be a very common thing. Like mm-hmm. there are conventions that do it this way, but they'll have like. You know, guest panelist, and this person has, like, an autograph square. Like, Mike Toole gets this treatment
exactly,
sometimes,
right?
You know? But,
so,
like, and there's good reason for that. Like, mm-hmm. Mike shows up, puts on a show, and it's people show up for it.
Yeah,
you know?
and he's, and so he should be treated like a guest when
yeah.
he goes to a convention. I'm just saying that that's not, obviously, that's not true of any panelist, but I'm not sure that the question is asking that. So, like, but I think that every panelist that has, like, at least two or three scheduled panels, depending on the size of your convention, like, at least comp their badge. Flying them out and putting them up, probably not unless they're, like, a guest.
If they're putting on a panel, uh-huh. give them a badge.
Yes, that's what
maybe
I'm saying.
If just for the day. Maybe if, well, you said two or three panels. I'm just saying, in my opinion, if they're putting on one panel, uh-huh. give them a badge, I think, for the whole show. If you don't want to do that, give them a badge just for the day.
Uh-huh.
I don't see what, you know, you should be able to budget for this. If 30 panelists uh-huh. break your convention budget, you are doing it wrong, my
yeah.
friends.
Yeah, I said two or three because I don't know anybody who just does one. Like, it's usually not.
I do sometimes. Oh. I usually just do, but I'm technically an industry guest. Mm-hmm. I do an Anime News Network panel, and then here's how you get paid to write about anime panel. They're mm-hmm. listed as industry, usually.
Right?
So that's different. A mm-hmm. fan panelist is somebody who does multiple topics, multiple panels, throughout
exactly,
the weekend,
and that's what I'm familiar like, with. Yeah. And here's the thing: no, you probably would not comp that person and put them up like as a fan coming to the convention doing like. A panel on Full Metal Alchemist and a panel on My Hero Academia in a completely unofficial capacity. Like, no, you're not going to, like, put that person up, but you should comp their badge, you know?
Definitely comp their badge. I feel like it's up to the convention to say, like, okay, we want these panelists. We're willing to spend X resources to get them here to put on X, you know, and that you have an expectation you're doing X number of panels throughout the weekend. And then the rest of them you source locally. Uh-huh. You bring in local fans and you offer them comped badges for doing panels. Like, I don't see how there's any other way to do it. I don't see why you would do it any other way or relying on free labor, which is bullshit. Mm-hmm. And being self-righteous about it and telling people that you should do it for the love of it.
that's a bizarre response.
If that ever comes out, if you listen to this show, mm-hmm. and you ever tell anyone you don't deserve compensation, you should just be doing this because you love it, from me to you, fuck you.
Yeah.
So that's from me to you. And if anyone ever tell, the way I should phrase that is, if anyone ever tells you that, say to them, fuck you. That is what they deserve. So yeah, that's how I feel. What do you think?
Yeah, that's, I think we're totally on the same page there. I think that, like, depending on the size of the convention, like, expectations for what panelists should be given is, and depending on what capacity the panelist is there for, whether they be industry press or just a fan or whatever the case may be, like, it's waffly. There's not one answer you can give for this. But if somebody is there in a capacity as a panelist, I think you should just let them, like, let them in, comp their badge. You know, like, that's what you should do. That's the least what you should do. Beyond that, it gets dodgy and it depends on the specific situation. But it's like, if somebody's just hosting a couple panels at your con, yeah, like, you should just comp their badge. Like, It's not that complicated.
All right. Cowboy Funk wants to know, favorite and least favorite episode of Evangelion? Well, I can tell you my favorite episode is number 24 with Kaworu. I don't really have a least favorite. If I did, it's in the early part of the show. I hate to say this, but it might be Both of You Dance Like You Want to Win, just because, like, it's just jokes.
It's just silly.
It's just silly. It's when the show is still pretending to be something that it's not, and it's not as compelling. But I still love that episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I still watch it every time. I still like it. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think it's my least favorite mm-hmm. of the show. Mm-hmm. The early episodes in general are like the second half of that show is a masterpiece. The first half leads into it really well, but the first half is not as good. Mm-hmm. But those are nitpicks. Do you have an answer for this?
Yeah, I do. So if I'm not allowed to say End of Evangelion as favorite episode, because that's what I would say, that doesn't count. So I guess standalone, because they mostly lead into each other. They don't really stand alone. But favorite standalone is probably the Lilliputian Hitcher. I liked the way that story built up and played out. Because that's the first time we really get into a look into Ritsuko's why she acts the way she does, and I liked that character, and so I thought that the way that paid off was really good. So as a standalone thing, but like, it's not the strongest part of the show. It's just the strongest chunk that I can pull out 20 minutes specifically of, that's not connected to other minutes, you know what I mean? And the least favorite is the ending of that show, because it sucks. Anyway, I don't like the ending.
Why
of
do you just troll me? You just troll me.
I'm not trolling you. This is how I feel.
You
about
just fucking troll me, and I'm not supposed
I'm
to
laughing.
Say anything.
I'm laughing because I know it's going to lead to an awkward situation.
You're laughing because you know that I can't sit here and defend it. Really, like I can't.
I mean, you
we
could,
don't
but
have
it would
time.
Be a tangent. And here's the thing. I'm not trying to troll you. I'm just answering the question honestly.
Just
but it is annoying. So
fuck out of me.
I know it's annoying for you. It's just how I feel. I'm sorry.
Trolling.
I don't like that ending.
Trolling.
End of Evangelion's great, though. I've come strong around.
They're
strong
both good.
Whatever
they're
you say.
They're both valid.
Whatever. They're both valid. I didn't say it was invalid. I just said I didn't like it.
Both
sucks.
Are
I don't like
good.
It. I don't like it. It's bad.
Let's get on to a different subject. Reed with Pride wants to know, in a previous episode, Jacob mentioned being wrong about the end of Evangelion. That's not what the question says. In a previous episode, I think Jacob was wrong about the... No. Let me try that again. In a previous episode, I think Jacob mentioned catching up on Natsume's Book of Friends. Oh. Any readouts or thoughts to share? Did you catch up on Natsume's Book of Friends?
Yeah, I watched quite a bit of it.
Natsume Yujincho?
Natsume Yujincho. So I get why this is the most beloved Iyashike show, like, in Japan. Like, non-otaku Iyashike show. I get why this is the most beloved one, because it is, like, extremely Iyashike. And it does build, like, very slowly. Like, it is, you are kind of, I feel like people's relationship, I assume people's relationship with Natsume's Book of Friends is really, like, is growing up with this guy. Because he goes from, like, this being this recluse. This guy has the same backstory as Chisei from Magus Bride, only with yokai instead of Western fairy tale creatures. In that, you know, like, everybody thinks he's crazy, and he's been passed around foster homes because they think he's got some sort of, you know, he's something broken in his brain or something like that. And he can just see yokai, and that's it. And, it's him, like, slowly growing to open up and to, like, you know, make friends with other people and to, like, try to talk to the yokai instead of running from them in terror. And, you know, like, you know, it's just that building. And it has the best mascot character in any anime ever, who has sold a bazillion plushies and a lot of merchandise, which is Nyanko Sensei. He is the best mascot character because he does the I'm a cute mascot thing really well, but then he's also a character, and he can switch between the two very effortlessly. So it's like, if you want a character and you want like a compelling part of the story that drives it and offers a, you know, a perspective on all of this, then you have that. And then if you just want the cute cat to roll around and be silly and drink sake, then he does that too. So, you know, yeah, I get why it is basically sort of a hallmark series in Japan. And I also get why it hasn't caught on as much over here, because like the people who love it really love it, but it is a sit down and eat your warm bowl of chicken soup like growing up with these characters thing. So, you know, it kind of has that appeal, and if you're not into that, you're not going to stick around.
In your opinion, is it the best Yashike?
I don't know how do you qualify that? Like, that's not my...
It's a personal thing. It's what you respond to the most. I'm not asking you to define it objectively. I'm just saying, what's your favorite? Like, is it your favorite now?
No, because I like shows to, like, end, and I like... when I like healing shows, like, I like Mushishi because bad things happen to people, and it's a little shocking and stuff sometimes. Like, Natsume's Book of Friends is not like that. So, that's not really my genre, is the issue. But as an example of a genre that you're just supposed to, like... It's supposed to be kind of part of your life, like a Sunday comic strip you grew up with, almost... that's kind of what it said. Instead of jokes, it's a Sunday comic strip that instead of jokes, it's like reassurances and stories about like people, chicken soup for the soul. And so as that, it's really, really strong. And I can see why people attach to it really hard. It's very, very good on that level. If you're looking for something different than that, then, it'll probably bore you. But as an example of that sort of thing, it's really good. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Golden Geek wants to know thoughts on the recently announced extended cut of In This Corner of the World. That's an interesting question. How do I feel about that? The movie doesn't need more. It doesn't need more. Mm-hmm. It's really good as it is. Like, great as it is.
Yeah, I don't think that adding more would hurt it, because I imagine everything they're adding is in the early is about her early life before things really go badly, you know?
I guess. Who knows?
So I don't think
the manga's,
that hurt.
You know, considerably longer than the movie. So I would imagine they're just adding in more scenes from the manga.
Yeah, apparently the biggest thing that they're adding is her friendship. Like, she has an entire friendship subplot before she moved that was cut out. So they're just adding that person in, I guess. And you know, I don't think the movie doesn't need more. It's kind of a masterpiece by itself. But I don't think adding more would dilute it anymore, because of the point of the film. The point is to mire you in this time and place as hard as they possibly can, because it got destroyed.
Yeah.
You know,
it's already a long movie.
Yeah. So I think adding more doesn't necessarily take away from that. So, you know, so I think it's good.
Cool. All right. On a scale of 1 to horrified, your thoughts on Speaking Pikachu? I mean, just that video was really funny.
It's just out of context. Even if you don't know shit about Pokemon, just watching everybody react in horror as if their own, like, cat had suddenly started speaking to them is really good.
I have a totally different reaction to it, knowing that it is a dream sequence that is supposed to be, like, kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just like, oh, well, whatever. They were going to do that eventually.
Mm-hmm.
If it were real, it would be like, what the are fuck? They doing?
Yes.
Like, well, don't do that. Like, if they had made a decision, guess what, motherfuckers? Pikachu talks now. That would just be crazy.
Well, Detective Pikachu...
he has, like, funny, gruff voice, though, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, doesn't he? He talks with, like, a... It's like a joke. He, like, talks with, like, a... Like...
I haven't heard anything from this. I don't know if that's just what people say they want to hear, or if that's actually what's been confirmed.
It should be. It should be like the Japanese Tone Loc doing it.
Yeah. But I don't know anything about that. So,
or somebody like get a member of the Yakuza cast to do it.
Well, see, they had those Pokemon Dungeon, Mystery Dungeon anime and stuff like that, where I'm sure Pikachu...
It's not an anime, that's a game.
They made anime out of it. I'm sure Pikachu talks in it. So, I mean, we've heard Pikachu talk in some capacity. We've just never heard Ash's Pikachu talk, which is different, because he's not just a Pikachu, he's Ash's Pikachu specifically. Like, he has a definable personality. Unlike, like, not every Pokemon has a definable personality. Pikachu has a very specific personality that people have grown attached to over 20 years. And so hearing him talk with, like, a cute little anime girl voice is like, no! You know, it's bizarre to people. And,
And in that, wasn't that clip anime dub girl voice?
Yes,
so it was extra
that was English.
Weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I understand it from the Japanese perspective. So, like, it's probably still really weird to Japanese people who grew up with Pikachu since 1997. However, with it, when you look at it at a meta level, it makes sense. Like, clearly the reason they did this, it wasn't just to give a weird dream sequence, because it's not like Pikachu says anything we didn't already know, which is, I don't want to go in the Pokeball because I don't want to leave you, which is not true. That's a retcon. Originally, he didn't want to go in the Pokeball because he's just an asshole. but, like, it's just because he's an asshole, and when he sees Ash, like, protecting him, he goes, okay, like, I'm still not going to do that, but I'll be your friend. Like, but he's not like, I'm your buddy. Like, that's not the reason. But so whatever, a retcon. However, the point is, I understand why the Japanese side of it did this, because Ikuo Otani has been playing a character that only says one word for 20 years. She had, like, a career before Pikachu and during Pikachu that is largely, like, you know, she can speak other words and is a Seiyu in other capacities. Like, before, remember, she was Merle in Escaflowne before Pokemon existed. Pokemon didn't exist and she was playing this character, so who knows how her career would have been different if she wasn't playing Pikachu. So they it's like, she's been playing Pikachu for 20 years. Give her a line in words, like a line in language. I think that was I think the reason they did that, I think, was to celebrate Ikuo Otani and let her voice in her own words how she thinks Pikachu feels. I think that was the intent. As that is really, really sweet. Out of context is horrifying and weird and hilarious and strange. Yeah. So, yeah.
Patrick Jones asks, what are your feelings on human trafficking and child brides being used in the ancient Magnus bride? Does a 15-year-old girl selling herself into slavery to be bought by a 1,000-year-old slave owner to be his bride add anything to the story that you wouldn't get if Chisei was in an orphanage and he adopted her and we had a proxy parent-child relationship?
Yes. That would be worse, actually. If he adopted her, it would be more weird and upsetting than if she had attempted to sell herself and somebody bought her. That's a different statement.
I think actually it's written that way specifically because it gives her agency.
Yeah, and it gives her agency, and it expresses this person was trying to end their life and someone stopped
them. Yeah, it's supposed to be an uncomfortable situation. It's supposed, that aspect of the story is supposed to make you uncomfortable.
And these situations, it's all about framing and context.
Absolutely.
What is the individual framing and the context of the specific thing? You could have a perfectly healthy relationship. You could have two people that fell in love of their own volition, like, can come together or whatever, and it's completely on paper, quote unquote, normal. But the actual context and the framing of it is, like, weird and creepy and, like, gender essentialist or abusive or bizarre or uncomfortable or just not realistic or something. You know, framing, context, and everything. And the reason people have fallen in love with Magus Bride this season, it's not only our most popular, our most well-read review series, it's also the highest rated. For something like that to happen, that's extremely rare. Like, that happened for Yuri on Ice, and that happened for ReZero, and it doesn't happen for things that much to be, like, the most high traffic and the highest ratings. So, like, a bunch of people were watching it and overwhelmingly loving it instead of it being divisive. Like, Kino's Journey, a lot of people were reading it, but it's in ratings, it's, like, down in the lower third or fourth of ratings. And, anyway, my point is, people connected to this so hard because of the context and framing. They wouldn't just be like, ooh, a slave girl gets bought by a bone daddy and then it's hot. Like, it's beyond that is this specifically what it's saying about depression and how you rebuild your life and connect to people, you know, when you're dealing with mental illness, depression, tragedy, isolation, anything like that. So, you know, I think that's more the focus. And it's not about, like, a guy buys a child bride and she learns to love him. It's not like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with you. Okay. We should probably wrap up pretty soon here. Let's get to these last couple. Steve Hanel wants to know, Miyazaki will always be known as the Walt Disney of anime, but if you were to recommend an anime director to fans of Don Bluth, who would it be? That's an interesting question. Bluth is such a specific look, and he didn't, like, in the 80s he had, like, kind of a focus, which was sort of animal movies, and then, you know, he had Dragon's Lair and, you know, Titan A.E. and shit like that, you know, and Anastasia. So as much as I want to say, like, well, there's not that many, you know, in terms of talking animal anime, there isn't, like, a tremendous amount of it. Like, there's some of it, but, and frankly, like, I can't really think of any anime that seems specifically influenced by Don Bluth. Mm-hmm.
How many anime do we know made by Mormons? Would that apply?
Like, no.
My point is that there are very few, like, he has a strong, like, his strong worldview that comes from his religion is not really a thing that crosses over in anime. The animal focus isn't really something that crosses over in anime. So it's hard to think off the top of your head. Like, you'd really have to think about it. You'd have to kind of do a deep dive into, like, what are his influences, what is the tone of his stories, and compare it to anime. And my point is that that sounds really fun and fascinating, but I would have to think about it. So on the fly, it's actually kind of really hard for me to answer.
Maybe we'll come back to this at some point. Mm-hmm. But the thing that comes to mind immediately is, like, you know, I don't know, Hosoda. Maybe. But that's such a weak...
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. That's a really good question. Give us some time to think about it. We're going to come... I'm actually going to write this down.
Mm-hmm.
Don Bluth. We're going to come back to this. All right. Let's see. Last question here from Mr. Stiv. Love your podcast. Thank you. Getting back in anime and hearing you throw out terms I'm not familiar with, is there an anime for beginners that could explain some of these terms and names, like shonen, yuri, moe? Sorry, my spelling is a little off. Boy. Beginners. Where do we send beginners?
I mean, there is a show this season called Anime Guitaris where all of the characters talk about these genres and stuff like that, but I think it's a little for people who are a firmer into, even though Star is a character who knows nothing about anime, the way that they talk about, like, this is a show where they talk about the 3-episode rule and they talk about Kamiket and stuff like that. So it's a little deeper into the culture than just explaining what is shonen, what is shoujo. We have, we answer a lot of these questions in our encyclopedia and the archives of our Answer Man column, but like an anime that directly explains what these genres are, I'm not sure that, you know, if you want to understand otaku culture and have that kind, not just shonen and shoujo, but like otaku culture as it formed in the mid-2000s, watch Haruhi Suzumiya, because those characters will just explain it to your face in that show, and the whole show is kind of about, like, constructing what that was and attempting to construct what that was in real life in the show. But, like, yeah, I don't know about something on a much simpler level of, like, what is shonen, what is shoujo. Like, that's hard to say.
Well, I would say this. If you're interested in it, you're curious, and you're starting this back up as a hobby, watch what interests you. And when you come across something, a word you don't know, just look it up and then spend a little time with it. Don't just look it up, look at the definition, and then move on. Spend a little time, look at a few things, you know, think about how it's used in context in the show. And that's how I learn when I'm pursuing my hobby. So, like, I like to read a lot of history. So reading a lot of history takes you down a lot of different rabbit holes, and you'll like I'll write down like moments in history that I want to learn more about. So, like, I've been reading a lot about Reconstruction recently. So as I read about that, there are elements and players and figures and everything that I want to read more about. So as I'm reading a general history, I go through that and I write down those names and I go look up other books and stuff that are about that person and, you know, the best scholarship about that moment or whatever. You can do the same thing with anime. Watch anime. I'm so sorry. I'm getting sick. I'm not having a good couple weeks here. As you're watching anime, you know, you run into a word, just Google it and, you know, try to think about it in the context of the show. And then if it turns out that sort of thing sounds like something where, like, you're like, oh, I really want to watch more BL. Okay, look up BL and then look for the best examples of BL. Like, lots of different places out there will give you top 10 lists or whatever. And that's generally how, you know, what you're doing is you're following your own curiosity. You're not forcing yourself to study. What you're doing is you're pursuing your interests. And that makes it feel less like homework. It's a little bit more of a natural process. So that's what I recommend. But it makes me think that maybe we need, like, a good catch-all beginners article that's like, here's the current lexicon.
I know Crunchyroll did a series of videos about that, actually.
They
did the thing called Anime Academy. I'm just not remembering.
Definitely check
so
that
go,
out.
So go look up, type Anime Academy into a YouTube search bar and look at Crunchyroll's videos on this. They have a video on Shonen, Shoujo.
Yeah, yeah,
know,
those
like
are
have
really
all
good.
That stuff.
Yeah, check it
so
out.
So why didn't I just think of that? I'm sorry, I forgot.
You know us, we're tired. Anyway, let's wrap it up
tired,
here.
But attempting to be thoughtful.
I have to stop recording now. My throat is shredded. All right, that wraps us up. Thank you, everyone, so much for your Twitter questions. Really appreciate it. This is Thanksgiving week. This podcast is going out on Monday. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time with your loved ones for our listeners in America and everyone else, enjoy the weekend. We will be back next week. I guess it's the last week of November. Yeah. So I guess we'll see you all next week then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks, Jacob.
All right.
Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, YouTube. Leave us comments and all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, have a good Thanksgiving. We'll see you all.